Radio Prague News.
Czechs start voting in regional and Senate elections. A former ambassador to Germany will be the president's new foreign policy boss. And Czech trade balance bounces back into the black in August. Czechs have started voting on Friday in Senate and regional elections. Voters will choose assemblies in 13 of the country's 14 regions, with the exception of Prague. Voting is being held in conjunction with elections to a third of the Senate. Polling stations open from 2 p.m. and will stay open until 10 p.m. on Friday and resume at 8 a.m. until 2 p.m. on Saturday. Altogether, 270 parties and movements are competing in the regional elections. 233 candidates are running for seats in the Senate. Of the latter, 19 senators are running for re-election. The regional elections are expected to be primarily a contest between the established parties and are being viewed as a litmus test for the 2017 general elections. Former Czech ambassador to Germany, Rudolf Jindrák, will head the Czech president's foreign policy team at Prague Castle, President Miloš Zeman confirmed on Friday. Jindrák has been earmarked to replace Hynek Kmoniček in the post, with the latter due to become ambassador to the United States in Washington. Before his Berlin posting, Jindrák was ambassador in Vienna and Budapest and previously served as a deputy minister in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. He recently served as a foreign advisor to Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka. The Czech trade balance in August recorded a surplus of 13.8 billion crowns, around 511 million euros. That compares with a deficit of 1.7 billion in the same month a year earlier. The biggest factors in the turnaround were higher exports of machinery and cars and lower spending on imported oil and other fuels. The trade surplus with other EU countries reached 47.9 billion crowns. The surplus so far this year runs to 146.6 billion crowns, a 55 billion crown improvement on the first 8 months of 2015. And Czech industrial production also rebounded in August with a 13.1% rise compared with the same month in 2015. That followed a 14.1% production drop in July. Part of the change is accounted for the extra number of working days in August. Factoring out that distortion, the rise was 7.7%, the Czech Statistical Office announced. High car production was one of the main factors, but on the negative side, pharmaceutical production was down by almost 16% in August. And the Czech National Bank has announced on Friday the volume of its foreign currency interventions in August aimed at sustaining its low crown policy. The bank said it spent 28.6 billion crowns buying euros. That's the second biggest monthly total for intervention this year, exceeded only by the 58.2 billion crowns in January. The bank is aiming to keep the crown at a rate of 27 crowns to the euro or lower under a policy initiated in November 2013. The rate of intervention is a sign of what sort of upward pressure on the crown the bank is forced to resist. And finally, the Czech charity in the Czech Diocese of Olomouc on Friday launched a collection for the hurricane-struck island of Haiti. The charity, ACHO, described the damage wrought by Hurricane Matthew as the worst natural disaster to hit the poor country since the earthquake and following cholera epidemic of 2010. Destruction on the island has so far caused around 340 deaths and destroyed crops, homes and infrastructure. The Czech charity intends to send two humanitarian workers to the island in the next week or two to work out where help can best be directed. It already has been active on the island for more than a decade. And the weather on Saturday is expected to be sunny with some cloudy intervals and top temperatures of around 12 degrees Celsius. That will stay mostly the same on Sunday. I'm Chris Johnston, and that was the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Ruth Franíková. Coming up in today's programme, Czechs are voting in regional and Senate elections. We'll have the details. The Italian company Grandi Stazioni has lost its 30-year lease of the main railway station in Prague. And later on in the programme, 14 Czech authors bring urban noir to Prague. All that coming up, so please stay with us. Polling stations opened in parts of the Czech Republic on Friday for voting in the regional and Senate elections. Voting is taking place in 13 of 14 of the country's regions, the sole exception being the Czech capital, and in a third of seats to the upper house of parliament. Jan Wellinger has the details.
To a degree, regional and Senate elections are always a litmus test on the national government, and this year is expected to be the same, with one notable exception, and that is that it will be the first test on the regional level for the relative political newcomers, ANO. Looking at the map of 13 of the country's 14 regions reveals dominance until now by their political partners in government, the Social Democrat. They're in every regional coalition government, with the exception of USKI. And the billion-crown question is how much ANO will gain at other parties' expense. The communists have worked with the Social Democrats in 8 regions for the last 4 years, while right-wing parties in the opposition at the national level barely registered, forming part of a coalition in just one region, that of Karlovy Vary. A whopping 270 parties and movements are registered in the regional elections, while 233 candidates are seeking to fill 27 seats in the Senate. And of those candidates, 19 senators are seeking re-election. The Social Democrats will also be seeking to retain a dominant voice in the Senate, where they currently have 33 seats. In the past, Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka, the leader of the Social Democrats, said he would consider it a success if his party retained or still formed the largest senators' club and held on as senior partners in regional coalitions. Currently, the party has 11 governors out of the 13 regions being contested. The Social Democrats, of course, have a party leadership conference coming up, and party leader Bohuslav Sobotka said he intends to seek re-election as chairman, facing, if needed, other potential candidates. And how his party does this weekend, and in the case of the Senate elections also the next, could further either weaken or strengthen his position. The ANO party, a newcomer on the regional playing field, as many have noted, stands only to gain. They do have 4 senators currently. And other parties which would certainly like to improve their position include the third party in the ruling coalition, the Christian Democrats, who currently have 3 senators and share power locally in 2 regions, Pardubice and South Moravia. The communists 4 years ago also gained the second largest number of mandates as well as leadership of the coalition in USKI. Over 4 years, they have frequently held strong positions in local governments with the Social Democrats. A big question also ahead of next year's national election is whether once dominant right-wing parties such as the Civic Democrats and Topo 9, now in opposition nationally, can rebound and make an impact again. And worth noting are a number of changes. Czechs living abroad can vote for candidates to the Senate, but not admissions abroad. They must travel to the Czech Republic and obtain voter ID from their embassy. Foreigners living in the Czech Republic, meanwhile, who are registered to vote, can also do so. The first round of voting to the Senate takes place on Friday and Saturday, October the 7th and 8th, and the second round next weekend on October 14th and 15th. Voting to the regions takes place just on this Friday and Saturday. The polls on Friday close at 10 p.m., open again on Saturday at 8 a.m., and close at 2 p.m.
Jan Wellinger with that report. The Italian company Grandi Stazioni has lost its 30-year lease of the main railway station in Prague after failing to complete a renovation of the historical part of the building by October 2016. Czech Railways Administration says the deadline can no longer be extended, but the Italian firm is still pushing for a compromise solution on the argument that all sides would lose out by ending cooperation prematurely. Daniela Lazarova has more.
13 years ago, Prague's main railway station was in a dismal state of disrepair, and unable to finance a reconstruction of this kind, Czech Railways Administration offered companies a 30-year lease of the premises in return for renovating the station. Grandi Stazioni won the contract in 2002, and the renovated newer part of the station, with its rows of shops and cafes, opened with fanfare in April of 2011. However, the renovation of the historical part of the building with its Art Nouveau architecture designed by architect Josef Fanta was dogged by problems. The original deadline in 2013 was extended until October 2016, but in recent months it became clear the company had no chance of meeting even that deadline. It requested another extension until 2018. Although it seemed that further negotiations might take place, on Thursday Czech Railways Administration announced that Grandi Stazioni had lost its 30-year lease contract by failing to meet the terms of the agreement and asked it to vacate the premises. Its lawyers claim that extending the deadline yet again is out of the question, since this would be in violation of the law on public tenders. Grandi Stazioni CEO Andrea Odoardi says the conditions of the agreement could not be met due to the poor condition of the historical part of the station, which was much worse than anticipated, requiring more money and a significantly longer renovation schedule. Transport Minister Dan Ťok says that argument is not convincing.
This excuse is really lame. Anyone undertaking renovation knows there may be extra work involved, and this was taken into account in the contract. 13 years seems long enough.
Grandi Stazioni has confirmed that it received official notification of the decision and a request to vacate the premises, but it appears to be still pushing for a compromise agreement on the argument that scrapping the deal would be a loss for everyone involved. It says that if all else fails, it will take the matter to court, seeking damages for loss of profit as well as the money which had already been invested into the reconstruction. It moreover points out that it has the intellectual property rights to the project documentation for renovation. The Czech National Heritage Institute has expressed concern regarding this particular aspect and the future of the ongoing renovation. Whether this particular concern can still reverse the decision or whether the two sides are in the process of negotiating a termination settlement is not yet clear.
Daniela Lazarová with that report. Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where it's now time for another edition of The Arts with Jan Wellinger.
Noir fiction and the subgenre urban noir do not have a long-standing tradition in Czech writing, where the emphasis for many years was on classic mysteries and detective stories. But that didn't stop the independent Brooklyn-based publishing house Akashic Books from addressing Czech publisher Pasika. The idea? Of adding Prague to its long-running urban noir series. The series, featuring work by local authors, has covered dozens of cities worldwide already, from places like Baltimore to Tehran. Editor Pavel Mandis was tasked with finding 14 Czech authors to each write a separate story set in a different part of the Czech capital. He revealed details at a press event this week marking the release of the Czech-language version of the book called Praha Noir.
This was a kind of first attempt to plant the genre here, and at the same time, an important aspect for me was to give our authors greater exposure abroad. Put simply, our authors struggle a little for recognition in Anglo-Saxon countries, so this project was an opportunity. I kind of wanted to smuggle them in. We'll see how things go from here. So far, the English release by Akashic Books has been set for the summer of 2017. The translation is underway, so we'll see how things move ahead.
Authors in the new compilation include the chief rabbi of the Czech Republic, Karol Sidon, writing under the name or pen name of Chaim Cigan. And then there's Kateřina Tučková or Miloš Urban. He's known for modern Gothic horror. I talked to him about his short story in Praha Noir. You'll be hearing that shortly. But first, here's Milan Michalek of Pasika, who told me more about how Praha Noir came together.
We have been approached by the American publisher Akashic Books, who've been running the Noir series for many years. I think they have several dozen volumes already published or in preparation, and of course they were very interested in having Prague in this series. So we said, well, what we're going to do is to try to find the editor who's the key person for the project, and hopefully we'll be able to find 12 to 14 authors. So we're very grateful to Pavel that he actually succeeded in finding not only 14 authors, but 14 excellent Czech authors. So I think this book will not only be about Prague, about noir, about crime, but also will be a little bit of a showcase of what's happening in Czech literature at the moment and And we're actually very pleased to have not only genre authors, but also some major names, basically known outside crime writing, and sometimes a part of the Czech literary scene.
Mm-hmm. Could we talk a little bit, mention some of the authors whose stories are in the book?
Well, we have several generations of authors. We have people like Karel Sidon, Ondřej Nev, people who have had an experience in crime or mystery, who wrote about Prague in the past. We also have some great names from the Czech crime literary scene, like Michala Klevisova, Michal Sikora, and some very promising new names like Martin Goffa or Štěpán Kopřival, people who in some cases have been known outside the noir or the crime genre, but have produced excellent stories for the collection.
In general, is it true that the classic detective story, that has a longer or a more set tradition here than noir? Pavel Mandis mentioned some of the reasons, talking about the fact that for 40 years there was communist rule, so detective stories, I suppose, focused on different aspects because the police could not be sort of depicted as the bad guys, as is often the case, yes. Reversed in noir.
Yeah, I think it's true that the noir tradition has not been particularly strong in the Czech Republic and Czechoslovakia. Czech crime traditionally has been very much in the line of the classical detective story. But Prague also has different literary traditions. We've had a long tradition of, let's say, mystery stories and mystery novels, things like the Golem tradition. I think it was only natural to sort of connect to many of these lines. So I think we have a very wide collection in the end, and very pleased to see that. It's not really an orthodox noir book. It's a book of many faces, and we really like that.
I suppose that is also the point, to take these kind of projects from city to city, because every city or different cultures are going to have a different way of tackling the problem. That's the point, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's a part of the project, you know, discovering the faces of these American foreign cities, and you know, comparing the traditions. And I think that's a part of the excitement of this experience, and we're very pleased to contribute with this sort of very specific, very, very Prague-based approach.
14 authors is too much to list off the different stories, obviously, but is there any one story that knocked your socks off when you read it? Maybe it had a twist that you didn't see coming?
I'm thinking of two stories. One by Kateřina Tučková, which is set in the building we're standing right now. I think works very nicely with Prague history, with the political history of Czechoslovakia, also with the atmosphere of place. So it's not exactly a noir story, but it's a little bit of a mystery story with a sort of a crime twist at the end. And then I really liked the two stories that are included in the first part of the book, which are kind of in the tradition of the Hardboiled school, very brief, sort of condensed writing, things that are probably the closest to American expectations, perhaps. Written by Martin Goffa and Štěpán Kopřiva. But all of them are well worth reading, I think.
And that was Milan Machacek of Paseka telling me there those details. Now, one of the stories many readers are looking forward to is by author Miloš Urban. His story is called Disappearances on the Bridge. Here's the author himself.
Well, it certainly was a challenge for me. And the location, Charles Bridge, it was for me. I wanted to write about the old town or the cathedral, but these locations were already taken. So I decided on the greatest challenge of them all, Charles Bridge. And it was maybe a bit lucky for me that I had read an article in the newspapers about a certain new series of cameras that should look upon Charles Bridge and look out for potential crime there. And the cameras are really high-tech and very quality stuff. And so I thought that maybe I could use these cameras which are installed near the bridge, and let's make some problem, some plot where the cameras can't see the crime. And that's, I'm not going to say more, but that's basically the plot. People go for a walk on the bridge and suddenly they disappear. And the cameras see them and then they don't see them. And the policemen are quite reluctant to look out for what is happening. But then some of them take initiative and go there and look for the culprits, and they start to disappear too.
It's a nice juxtaposition as well that you have one of the oldest bridges in all of Europe combined with this modern technology. I'm sure that's something that must have gone through your mind, obviously, when you were forming the story.
Yeah, yes, because there's a discrepancy in that and there's some drama in that. And, well, I wanted to put these things against each other.
When we talk about noir in general, are there elements that every good noir story should have, or is it the case today that the genre has been broadened, subverted?
It can be very broad, but I always have to have there the woman that lures the man or men into some kind of great danger. But it doesn't have to be really too bloody. It has to be a little bit crazy, please.
Crazy, please, indeed. Author Miloš Urban. And a little crazy sounds pretty good to me as well. English readers, as you heard already, can look forward to that Akashic Books edition, barring unexpected changes, in 2017.
Jan Wellinger with that edition of The Arts. And that brings us to the end of today's program here on Radio Prague. If you have any comments about today's program, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Franková. Thank you very much for joining us and goodbye.